Chapter 3. I held completely still so I wouldn't alert the intruder, and I waited for him to make his move. I knew I could conjure a fire dagger in less than a second, and I held my breath as I listened for his next steps.
Ouch!
A female voice suddenly whispered, and I blinked in confusion.
Well, don't stop in the doorway.
Another woman responded, and then giggled. Hello? I leaned up to my elbow and peered into the darkness. Then the tent flap was lifted again, and a shaft of moonlight lit up the tent to reveal the dryad sisters sneaking inside.
Lord Evan,
Polina slurred.
We were looking for you.
I was right here. Did you ladies enjoy your wine?
Very much,
Marina answered with a firm nod.
Now, we'd like to enjoy you.
I purred at the dryad's blunt reply, and I sat up to drink in the sisters' perfect bodies. Polina had undone her braid, and her emerald hair flowed over her shoulder in waves, while Trina's belt was askew and left her robes barely covering her bare torso. Marina chewed on her bottom lip as she waited for my reply, and my cock throbbed at the sight. "Then get over here, so I can fuck all three of you," I growled. In the blink of an eye, the sisters were on top of me. Trina got to me first and straddled my hips, while the other two plopped down on either side of my body. Marina dragged her tongue up the side of my neck and nibbled on my ear, and Trina pressed her hot lips to mine with a sigh. Then Polina kissed the other side of my throat and rubbed her hand across my chest and down my belly. I gripped Trina's hips and pulled her closer to me as I kissed her, and she began to grind her sweet pussy against my throbbing cock. My inner dragon begged to be inside her, but I wanted to savor my time with the trio, so I pushed back the urge. Still, I lifted my hips from the bed, and my dick pressed against Trina's warm center through my pants as she slid back and forth.
Oh, Lord Evan!
Trina moaned and threw her head back as the cloth of my pants rubbed against her. Suddenly, Polina's hand drifted down to graze my cock before she pressed her thumb to Trina's clit. Trina kept dry-humping me while her dryad sister rubbed circles on her pulsating mound, and her breath came in gasps. Then Marina reached over and slipped Trina's robe down her shoulders until the jade-skinned woman was completely naked on top of me. Oh, fuck, I'm done waiting, I grumbled as I lifted my hips enough to release my throbbing cock. Trina's pussy was ready and waiting as she slid down over me with a moan.
Oh, gods,
Marina sighed into my ear.
Fill her tunnel with your massive cock, Lord Evan. Then fill her womb with your dragon seed. Then you can fill ours,
Polina murmured from my other side. My cock flexed inside Trina's tight canal, and she shivered as the tip scraped against her deepest insides. Then she slid her hips back and forth as she rode my dick, and I could feel every inch of her tunnel as she squeezed and flexed around me. Marina and Polina slipped out of their own robes and began to fondle Trina's bare tits, and they rubbed their sister's nipples between their fingers. Then they dipped their heads down and took her breasts into their mouths, and I watched as Trina's green eyes widened and then rolled back as both my cock and her sister's pleased every part of her smooth body.
Lord Evan!
Trina whimpered as her tunnel began to spasm against my shaft.
I'm about to come!
Yes, take all of my cock!
Oh! Come in me, my lord dragon! Fill me up with your seed!
Then she screamed as her pussy walls squeezed my dick, and her orgasm shook her body as her sweet nectar poured down to my thighs. Fuck! I groaned and released what felt like gallons of my dragon seed into her hot core. Electricity raced down my spine as my hot semen flooded Trina's trembling body, and I gripped her hips as my climax rippled down my spine until our juices dripped between us.
Me next,
Marina squealed as she released Trina's tight nipple from between her lips. As you wish, I growled, and Trina climbed from my lap on trembling legs before I turned toward Marina. I pushed her back onto the bed and kneeled down between her thighs. Marina squirmed underneath me as she waited impatiently for me to fill her, and I teased her slippery lips with the head of my cock.
Oh, please, Lord Evan.
She begged and wrapped her legs around my waist to pull me closer. Fuck! I groaned and plunged inside Marina's wet pussy. Her walls were slick with desire, and she nearly climaxed as I filled her tunnel with my erection. Trina and Polina climbed onto the bed on either side of Marina, and they began to play with Marina's round tits as they jiggled back and forth with my deep thrusts.
I want to taste Lord Evan while he fills my womb.
Marina grabbed Trina's hand and pulled her up toward her face. Trina giggled as she straddled Marina's face with her back toward me. Then Marina delved her tongue between Trina's sopping lips, and the two women moaned at the touch.
Don't forget about me!
Polina squealed and crawled over to kneel in front of Trina. Trina and Polina started making out while Marina tongued Trina's pussy, and I pounded into Marina's tight tunnel. I slammed my hips against hers over and over as the other two women pulled each other closer with every kiss, and a growl of desire rumbled deep in my chest.
Oh, gods!
Marina moaned and dug her nails into Trina's thighs while her pussy walls tightened around my cock. The dryad's orgasm crashed over her, and her back arched away from the bed as I pushed my penis deeper inside her clenching walls. Her sweet juices cascaded over my dick and onto the mattress, and her body shook with swells of pleasure.
Yes!
Trina cried out as her second climax sent her own nectar trickling down into Marina's mouth. I could see goosebumps dimpling the bare skin on her back as she grinded her hips on Marina's face and shuddered with her orgasm. Oh, fuck! I groaned, and another climax rippled through my body like a tsunami as I began to spray a load of cum into Marina's hungry little pussy. My body spasmed in waves as stream after stream dumped into the dryad's womb, and I dug my fingers into the grassy bed to keep pumping in and out of her warm tunnel.
My turn,
Polina announced in a sultry voice as soon as both Marina and I had stopped twitching and moaning. Well, get over here, then, I growled as I slid out from between Marina's quivering thighs. Polina crawled across the mattress with a grin and turned around with her round ass facing me. Her perfect slit dripped with anticipation, and I grabbed her hips and pulled myself toward her. Then I plowed my cock into her waiting pussy, and she cried out with pleasure. I thrust my hips back and forth and felt every inch of her drenched tunnel as I pushed as deep inside the dryad as I could. Her ass jiggled against my thighs with every pump, and I playfully slapped the smooth jade skin as I continued to fuck her from behind.
Oh, my lord!
She gasped and giggled.
Oh, gods, it all feels so good. Spank her again,
Marina cried out.
Yes, do it!
Polina begged and lifted her ass just a little. Mmm, I moaned and smacked her bare ass again.
Ooh!
Polina's green skin wiggled at the contact, and she pressed her hips back against me to take even more of my thick cock inside her. Huh. Don't just sit there, I growled to her sisters. You can have fun together.
Of course.
Marina giggled and tugged Trina closer to me.
As our lord commands,
Trina purred. The two dryads wrapped their arms around each other, and they quickly became a tangle of emerald-skinned arms and legs as they kissed each other while I thrusted in and out of Polina's warm tunnel.
Oh, Lord Evan!
Polina screeched as she clawed at the mattress. Her toes curled up next to my legs, and then she tumbled over into an orgasm that shook her body like an earthquake. Her pussy squeezed my cock like a vice as her juices flooded her tunnel, and it felt like a dam had broken as the warm liquid rushed over my shaft. I could feel every drop of her climax, and it sent me over the edge. My dick shot out a warm load of my seed that filled her warm canal and mingled with her sweet juices. Then I gripped her waist as I pounded into her while my body was racked with waves of my orgasm until her pussy overflowed. My seed and her nectar dripped down her inner thighs because of my rough thrusts, and a sense of satisfaction filled my chest at the sight of my mark on her body. Polina dropped to her stomach with a contented sigh, and the other two dryads laid down next to her.
That was amazing,
Polina breathed.
The best,
Marina agreed and grinned.
Now I'm finally tired,
Trina said with a yawn.
We just needed Lord Evan's seed to warm us up before bed.
I'm actually wide awake. I want to take each of you again, but I do need to go check on Nike. It should be close to my turn to take over watching the camp.
Oh, I want you to fill me again,
Polina sighed, but then she yawned.
You can barely keep your eyes open, Polina.
Trina chuckled as she closed her eyes and snuggled next to the other woman.
Lord Evan needs you riding him so you can milk all of the seed from his magnificent cock.
It's okay, ladies. You all had a long day. Get some rest.
Be careful guarding,
Marina murmured with her eyes closed.
We love you, Lord Evan, so much.
Her sisters were already asleep on my bed, and their wine-induced snores soon filled the tent. I snickered to myself as I pulled my pants and boots on to go outside. Then I pushed open the flap and stepped into the night. The fire crackled, though the flames had died down with no one to stoke them. The occasional cricket chirped, and the three moons of Anati reflected on the still surface of the pond. A furry little creature froze at the edge of the water, and it stared at me for a long moment before it scurried back into the grass. It was so quiet and peaceful out here, it made me want to stay a little longer before we headed to a city that I just knew would be a pain in the ass. Between a known challenge to the king and the terrified sheep family, Atheson was likely to be stimulating, but I knew it wasn't anything we couldn't handle. I looked around for my fellow noble, and finally I saw him crouched between the trees keeping watch. His sword was on his belt, but his hand rested on the exposed hilt, while his silver eyes stayed on the open fields around us.
"I can guard a little longer if you need more time," Nike said as I got closer.
"They're all asleep now, and I got a hell of a nap earlier, so you get some rest."
"If you're sure," he replied and stood up with a stretch.
"The most exciting thing out here was a herd of goats, so don't fall asleep."
"I won't. I'll see you in the morning."
"Good night," Nike said, and he walked toward his tent.
I looked out into the night sky and inhaled a breath of the fresh air. There were a few things about Earth that I missed, like my Aunt Emma and television, but there weren't many places there that smelled clean and felt natural. So far, most of Anati had felt like home. I compared and contrasted my two worlds for a long while, but my thoughts were interrupted by a rustle in the grass behind me. I reached for the hilt of my own sword, but then I sensed Mariah's familiar presence get closer as she walked through the trees toward me.
"Your turn to keep watch?"
she asked quietly.
"Yep," I confirmed as I looked over my shoulder at the sword spirit.
"Couldn't sleep?" Mariah looked ethereal as she glided across the ground in her nearly transparent white dress. Her white hair was twisted back into a braid that grazed the dirt at her feet, and her blue eyes were wide awake.
"No."
She shook her head and looked down.
"I'm not sure why not. I'm usually quite tired at the end of our days when I'm in my physical form."
"Is something on your mind?" I asked.
"What do you mean?"
Mariah cocked her head to the side. "Like, are you thinking about something a lot? Something that's bothering you, maybe?"
"I don't think so,"
she replied with a frown.
"I always have so many thoughts in my head. My duties as your guide, memories from previous nobles, my own thoughts and feelings. In truth, it would be difficult to pick out one thing that keeps reappearing."
"What about what Malo said? About you helping me when I was fighting the Triad?"
"Oh, there's no need to worry about that,"
she sighed with a dismissive wave of her hand.
"If anything even comes of it, I'll be fine."
"What do you mean?" I raised an eyebrow. "Why wouldn't you be fine?"
"There are certain punishments for such actions. It's nothing you should worry about."
"I do worry if it concerns your safety. Do I need to keep you away from something? What am I missing here?"
"Nothing, my lord,"
the spirit replied and offered a smile before she turned to the east.
"Oh, look! The sun is coming up!"
I frowned at her obvious effort to avoid the conversation, but I decided to let it go for now. It was hard to rein in my protective instincts, especially when it came to one of my women. Whatever it was, Mariah wasn't worried about it, so maybe I shouldn't be either. Besides, I needed to wake everyone up now to continue to Atheson. We still had several hours left on our trip, and I wanted to know what had been going on with Rofin and his family. Mariah followed me back through the trees to the campsite, and I pulled open the flap to my tent where the dryads laid sleeping on my grassy mattress. "Up and at 'em, ladies," I called out.
What does that even mean?
Trina groaned and rolled over to snuggle up with Marina.
No clue.
Marina mumbled and wrapped Trina's arm around her waist. It means the sun is up, and you should be too, I laughed.
Fine.
Paulina groused and then peeked out of one eye.
I suppose we can't complain about having little sleep.
No, you can't, I agreed with a wink. The dryads giggled and began to roll out of the bed, and I walked over to each tent and woke up the rest of my lovers and then Nike. Within a few minutes, everyone was crowded around the fire as Nike warmed up the remaining chunks of boar meat for breakfast. The aroma of the warm pork filled the air, and it seemed to wake everyone up for the day. Aliona opened another knapsack of the tiny, multicolored berries and put them in one of the pans. "What are you doing?" I wondered.
"Making a fruit drizzle for the meat,"
she replied as she grabbed a pestle from her spatial storage and began to smash the fruit. Clever, I grinned, and turned back to everyone else. "So, how are you ladies feeling this morning?"
"Truly not bad,"
Aaliyah answered with a smile.
"Most certainly better than the last time we had the wine."
"I can agree with that,"
Laika chimed in, and her gray eyes were bright and alert as her ears twitched back and forth on her head.
"I'm just oddly hungry."
"Starving,"
Ravi added, and the phoenix's stomach rumbled loudly in agreement.
"I'd say Forsyth's new blend was a success. We'll make sure to let him know."
"I'll tell Valera when I send her a message before we leave," I decided. "I just need to eat first. For some reason, I've worked up quite an appetite." The dryads giggled and winked dramatically at my feigned surprise.
"Breakfast is ready," Nike announced.
So we quickly piled food on our plates and scarfed it down. The meat was just as good the second time around, and I finished my plate in record time. While the women finished their food, Nike and I took down the tents and rolled them up before we tossed them into the wagon. Then he stomped out the fire, and I gathered the roasting pots and put them back into the knapsack. Finally, Laika led the horses from the water back to the lead wagon and prepped them to travel, and once we had the campsite cleaned up, everyone piled back into the wagons. As I settled on the bench of the lead wagon, I conjured a messenger dragon in my palm, and I leaned down to give it my message. "Go to Valera," I instructed the tiny beast. "Tell her we're heading to Atheson now and everything is good so far. Also, Forsyth's new wine was a hit. How is Junior? I miss you both already." The dragon purred softly in my hand before it took off toward Hatra.
"Ready?"
Laika asked as she lifted the reins.
"Yep. Let's see what these port cities are all about," I replied.
Laika nodded, tugged on the reins, and set the horses into motion. Before we'd left Hatra, Aliona had used a spell to link all the wagons together, so we only needed two horses to pull as many wagons as we needed in our caravan. I had a pretty good handle on my own magical abilities, but the princess's abilities to cast spells with her magic had been priceless in our journey around Rama. From kicking ass to fixing Lord Valen, Aliona knew her shit, and she was always trying to learn more. Even now, as we rode toward Atheson, my fiancé pulled a text out from her spatial storage and was reading through every line. She was a little bookworm, and it came in handy when we needed to research something. She felt right at home in the secret archives we'd found in Hatra. The underground storage held thousands upon thousands of books, from spell books, histories, bestiaries, and who knows what else, so Aliona loved it down there. Her love for discovery was contagious, too, as several of my other lovers had dug through the archives with her any time we were in Hatra. It was one of the many things I loved about my harem. They always wanted to hang out together, and we were one big, happy family. I smiled to myself as I remembered how uncertain I was about the whole harem thing at first. I knew I loved Aliona after the first night we met, but I was confused about how I could still have feelings for Laika. Then the Dryads introduced me to the idea of more than one lover, which was a total shock compared to how relationships worked on Earth. I was pretty sure Hugh Hefner was the only guy there who could get away with so many girlfriends. Now, here I was with a fiancé, 9 lovers, an egg, and a centaur queen who would be having my child. Shit was crazy. And fucking awesome. After a moment of consideration, I decided to summon another messenger to check on Mona in Lumen. She hadn't updated me on her pregnancy, and I didn't know how long a centaur dragon baby needed to bake. Another kaleidoscope-colored messenger appeared in my hand, and the little creature spun in a quick circle and waited for my directions. "Go to Lumen," I instructed. "Ask Mona how the pregnancy is going and how long it takes. Then wait for her response so you can bring it back to me." The tiny dragon dipped its head and zoomed away in the direction of the centaur city.
"I can't wait to see the baby,"
Aliona gushed as my magical messenger disappeared into the sky.
"She will be beautiful."
"As long as she takes after her mother," I quipped. "And as soon as we're married, I want to make a lot more beautiful babies that look like you."
"Oh."
Aliona blushed and put her hand over her mouth.
"Well, I was hoping for sons who looked like you."
"Let's just have a few of each, to be safe," I smirked, and winked at my future bride.
"I like that plan,"
she giggled. My inner dragon roared at the thought of growing our family and having a bigger pack to protect. I'd never had these instincts as a human, but as a dragon, I always wanted to mark my women as mine, gather as much treasure as I could, and to protect the ones I loved. I intertwined my fingers through Aliona's, and we bumped along for a few more miles before a familiar feeling tugged at my subconscious. "Hold on," I told Laika, and she pulled back on the reins to bring us to a stop. "Wait here." I hopped off the wagon, stood in the tall grass, and homed in on my instinctual desire.
"What's wrong?"
Aaliyah asked as she skipped over next to me.
"Oh, I remember that look,"
Ravi giggled when she sidled up on my other side.
"Our dragon has found treasure."
"Indeed. Follow me." The two women stayed close behind me as I jogged through the shoulder-high grass toward the treasure that called to me like a beacon. As I got nearer, the pulses of energy became stronger, and finally we reached a small campsite nearly hidden in the grass. A long canvas tent stood about 10 feet wide and just higher than the yellowy plants, and I held up my hand for everyone to stop while I looked for a sign of anyone inside. A light breeze blew across the campsite, and the flaps of the beige tent billowed in the wind, but didn't reveal enough about its interior. I conjured a fiery dragon in my hand, crept closer to the side of the tent, and listened for any sounds inside. Not even a whisper of a breath came from the shelter. So I grabbed the flap and yanked it open. The tent was empty except for piles of blankets and a few lanterns, and I stepped inside and pulled one of the blankets from the ground. The scent was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it, and held it out to the women as they walked in behind me.
"The bandits from yesterday,"
Aaliyah answered my silent question after she took a quick sniff.
"It smells like them."
The lioness was a keen hunter, and her sense of smell was much more honed than mine after years of tracking her prey.
"This must have been where they stayed when they weren't out attacking people,"
Ravi observed as she touched a lantern.
"It's cold, so it hasn't been lit for a while."
"Then it's probably also where they kept the things they stole," I murmured. "That's why my instincts called me here. But where could they keep it in this place? It's wide open, and I don't see anything that looks like treasure."
"What does your dragon sense tell you?"
Ravi asked, as she blinked her large blue eyes at me.
"That could help."
My dragon senses were practically screaming at me to get the treasure, so it was obviously close. But there weren't any chests or boxes, or even coin purses laying around. I paced around for a moment before I realized the answer was right in front of me. Well, below me, really. The ground under the tent was mostly the same as the grass outside, though they had trimmed it down to only a few inches, but only one place about 5 feet from the entrance had been cleared all the way down to the dirt. So I strode over to the bare spot and crouched to dig through the soil, and I clawed into the dirt until I hit something hard a couple feet underground. Then I pushed the other dirt out of the way until I could see a large box about 2 feet wide and pulled it out of the hole. The box was plain and looked like it was built haphazardly. The wooden slats on the sides were wilted and cracked, and the bottom almost fell off before I set it on the ground.
Wow, their carpentry skills need some work,
Aaliyah deadpanned. I chuckled as I wrenched the lid from the box, but the wood nearly disintegrated in my hands. So Ravi and Aaliyah squatted next to me to help pull the remaining chunks of wood from the sides to expose the box's contents. The crate was about 3/4 full of gold, jewelry, books, and a few other miscellaneous items the bandits had hidden away. I scooped handfuls of the treasure from the box and slipped it into my spatial storage with the rest of my hoard. My inner dragon preened as I realized how much my pile had grown over the past few months, and I knew it would only continue to expand as we traveled around Rama on our campaign. I emptied the box while Ravi and Aaliyah stayed back. They knew my dragon instincts for treasure had a tendency to make me protective over my hoard, and it wasn't a good idea to get too close. Then I stood up and brushed the dirt from my knees. Okay, let's get back on the road, I said with a grin.
Should we just leave the tent here?
Ravi asked and gestured to the empty space.
I'd like to burn it down, I grumbled as I recalled the thieves' threat toward Rofin's daughters. But there's a lot of grass around here that would just go up in flames, so I guess I could settle for shredding the place.
I can help with that.
Aaliyah grinned and extended her long claws until they reached nearly 6 inches in length.
Let's do it, I chuckled.
We spread out and tore up the canvas walls of the bandit's tent, and shreds of the cream-colored fabric tumbled to the ground as sunlight poured inside. Even the phoenix joined in and yanked the walls from their posts with a fury, and within a minute the tent was reduced to a few poles and scraps of canvas scattered between them.
That felt pretty good,
the lioness giggled as she inspected her claws.
And less messy.
True,
Ravi agreed with a smile. With that taken care of, we traipsed back toward our caravan, and Naomi eyed me curiously.
Dragon stuff, I smirked.
Can I join you on the next one?
The lizard mage asked with a hopeful smile.
Absolutely, I replied, and pulled myself up on the wagon next to Aliona.
Did you find what you were searching for?
The princess wondered without looking up from her book. Of course. And you?
I'll know it when I see it,
she murmured, and a smile curved her lips as she read through the page. Laika looked over with a knowing smile and then tugged the reins to set the horses into motion. We continued along the grasslands, and then the landscape transitioned into forests, hills, and valleys. The fresh scent of the ocean lingered in the air from the other side of the hills, and I could tell we were getting closer. By the time the sun was directly above us, we reached a corridor. The forested walls climbed high above us on both sides, and the path to the peninsula was open through the valley in between.
I don't like having the low ground like this, I muttered, as Laika slowed to enter the ravine. Anyone could be up there.
We do have a slight disadvantage, but they would have to come down to our level to finish a fight.
True, I murmured, but I kept my eyes moving as we traveled down the path.
The further we traveled west, the corridor narrowed until it was only about 30 feet wide. The hairs on the back of my neck stood on end, and I could tell someone was watching us now. So I searched the trees above us, but I couldn't see anything but greenery.
Do you feel that?
Laika whispered without turning her head.
Yeah, I replied under my breath. We must be close.
No sooner had I spoken the words did the corridor narrow even further and took a sharp turn to the right, where a tall iron gate blocked our path. The gate was anchored into the stone walls on either side, and it split open in the middle. 6 men stood behind the entrance in full armor from head to toe, with their swords gripped tightly in their hands, and they each stood over 6 feet tall and were wide as a fridge. Then another 4 large men crept out from behind the trees along the wall, and they held bows with arrows aimed straight for us.
Who are you?
One of the men inside the gate shouted.
What do you want?
I couldn't tell which one was speaking since they wore full face helmets and stood completely still in their defensive positions, but I decided to take the nice approach, at least for now.
I've come to speak with the leader of Atheson, I announced, as I got down from the wagon with my hands held up in surrender. We mean you no harm.
Our lord is not expecting any visitors,
a man in the middle replied, and stepped forward to address me.
You will request his audience, and you may return if he accepts.
That's really not how I do things,
See, when I want to see someone, I see them. Besides, no one has heard from Atheson in months. How am I supposed to get a message here if you don't respond?
If you do not receive a response, then your request was denied,
the man sneered, and I could feel his frustration radiate from his heavily armored body.
You have no right to assume otherwise, and you disrespect his lordship by appearing without an approval.
Well, he can come tell me himself, I shot back. If he doesn't, then he is disrespecting me, and that just won't work.
And who are you to demand respect from his lordship?
The man laughed, and the others joined in.
He has no time for foolish games.
The man's petty words ignited a rage in my chest, and my inner dragon roared as I clenched my fists and stormed closer to the gate. Then I opened my maw and roared a column of flames into the air above me. I am the Dragon Lord, I thundered as I conjured a fireball in my palm. And he will see me now!